I think being more proactive and sort of preventative is really the way we need to be pushing ourselves as a culture, is not going to the doctor when you're sick, but going to the doctor annually to make sure that nothing silently is happening to you.
Dying of laughter.
Not funny.
My mom has stage 4 cancer in her bones and in her breast. My dad's disease was 15 years. He died of ALS. I made a podcast about death. Seemed like the thing to do. And if you're sad by all of this, well, you're gonna die too.
Hey all, happy week. It's been really, really freeing and relaxing and stressful because I'm still working, but you know what I mean, to be in Atlanta. Change of scenery is huge. Even just walking down the street, I'm like, wow, I feel better than I used to feel because it's a different street. There's a different park, different energy. So I'm about halfway through and I'm trying to appreciate every moment of just being in a different city than my regular routine. And I also just really love it here. The people are super nice. I don't know what that means. There's not that many new people I've met since I've been here, but the encounters I've had have been lovely, and it's just a really great time. I made it out to Charlotte last weekend. My friend lives out there. We were able to hang out safely outdoors and rented a car and did that whole 4-hour drive. And I'd never been to Charlotte before. And it was so funny because the rent a car, of course, my boyfriend and I opted for, you know, Toyota something, just a small car. Nothing fancy. And we get there and they're like, hey, so the only car we have available is the minivan. And at the same time of me being like, do you think we could? My boyfriend just goes, no problem. All good. Great. And so I was like, maybe we could have asked if there was anything else. I don't know. They said there wasn't. I kind of feel like they just said that. But long story short, we've had a minivan driving all over the South. And it's just hysterical. It's just so huge. Like, it could end, but then it just keeps going. I was like, why did we rent an Airbnb? We could just live here. Like, let's move in. We're good. We're done. This place is huge and there's a place to sleep. So that's been funny. Anyways, today I'm so excited for today's episode with Christina Denton. Christina is an actor, producer, and also has experience in the wellness space, in nutrition and fitness. So we get to talk about how those things intersect, as well as losing her father to prostate cancer. We were able to speak before COVID about what it's like losing your dad, and she is just so eloquent in the way that she speaks about her experience growing up in Hollister with her 3 sisters. And fun fact, all 4 of them were in high school at the same time. I'm like, isn't that like kind of everyone's dream or nightmare? I don't know. I feel like it would be a dream to me. I would have loved to have had 3 sisters and all been in high school at the same time. My gosh, the Dentons. I love it. And she talks about a few books and resources that were really profound for her, specifically as it pertains to wellness and taking care of yourself. And we address how men's perspective on self-care is different. And I know a lot of you out there have lost someone to cancer as well. So it was really lovely to speak with Christina, and she just has such good energy. I emailed her to be like, hey, your episode's about to come out, and she wrote back like the nicest email. She was like, oh, hey, it's so good to hear from you. You're killing it. Like, I've listened to the episodes and it's great. And like, I don't know, she didn't need to say that. She's just one of those people that is full of good energy. And the last time I saw her was in January at the podcast launch party, which, God, that's such a weird feeling because that feels like another lifetime ago. Thank gosh I was able to launch this and have that little event in the new year before all of this closed down, because that definitely is something that would not be happening anytime after the time that it did happen. So I was thinking about the last time I saw her, which was at the event, and it was super appreciated that she came out and supported and was there. And you'll get to meet her very soon. And as always, you can instant message me. What is this, AIM? My gosh. As always, you can DM me on Instagram at dyingoflaughter_podcast, or my personal account is @_chels_who_else got comedy stuff on there. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'll be back to more of a regular schedule after Atlanta in a few weeks. And meanwhile, please enjoy this episode with Christina Denton. If you like the show, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, which is super appreciated and helps more people find the show. And if you have questions or just want to chat about the sick parent or person in your life, I'm on Instagram at @_chels_whoelse_ or dyingoflaughterpodcast@gmail.com. I hope you find this interview as relatable as I did. Have a great day, and I'll see you on the other side. Love you. Bye. So we so appreciate you coming and sharing your story. It means a lot. And I usually jump in by asking people about their goldfish moment. And what I mean by that is, do you remember a moment as a child when you conceptualized or thought about death in some way? For some people, it was their goldfish. Goldfish moment. Did your goldfish die? Goldfish moment. Did it make you cry?
One that probably stands out, and I was a little older, I was actually around 10, was when my grandmother's husband, who was my grandfather my whole life, he was step-grandfather, whatever you call him, mm-hmm. he passed away. And I remember hearing the story, because I was the oldest in my family, I remember the story was, oh, he passed away in his chair at home. And so whenever I remember just the very next time we went to the house, seeing that chair and feeling like I kept seeing him in the chair sleeping, you know, and sort of just feeling so kind of like confused and scared and not understanding where he went or what happened or the mechanism behind the physiology of why his body stopped working, you know? And so I think that's probably the earliest that I could really connect with thinking about, oh, death, and that's what happens to humans, and that's what happens to all of us, and family members will go away. And I think I probably obsessed over that for a while. I'm sure I did.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. I've always had a very vivid imagination and vivid dreams and would wake up thinking, oh, my God, you know, fires and this. And I remember that being a very significant moment in my family's life for me as a kid, you know, just going, oh my gosh, he's no, like, where did he go, you know, and just kind of that chair moment of seeing him and having visions of him not being alive in the chair was very powerful.
Did your family talk about him after he died?
I was raised in a very WASPy family, at least my grandparents' generation, right? So they're very much about, well, we don't talk about hard things, and we put everything in a drawer in a little box and we put it away, and that's how that is settled, right? So nothing is really, you know. And then my parents' generation, my dad was a bit younger than my mom, and so things were a little more talked about, but I think when it came to us kids, we really wanted to just dig in and talk about things, and they just didn't have the faculties to be able to explain things to us because they weren't ever talk to that way when they were young. So I think, you know, our generation raising kids, I don't even know what's going to happen because we're such open books comparatively to our grandparents' generation and even our parents. So I think they did the best they could with explaining what was happening. And shortly after that, I was 6 years later at 16, my uncle, who was only 46, passed away suddenly. And that way, I remember, because he had an open casket. So that was like a whole other level of experiencing death, because it was completely, he was a healthy, gorgeous doctor, you know, he was athletic and just boom, dropped dead one day in a hot summer afternoon. And so
did he have a heart?
Yeah, basically, they think, looking back on it, I think my aunt was mentioning to me, she thinks he was dehydrated severely because he was playing tennis in like 100-something degree weather up in Sacramento. And, you know, healthy otherwise, from what they could tell. But he just, I think by the time they got to him, you know, he just didn't have enough oxygen to his brain and he was just brain dead. And they were like, you know, beloved doctor at UC Davis. And it was just, it was such a huge funeral. Tons of people. Very, very moving.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And so it just was, again, it was like the family was hit by this what? And, you know, like, I mean, this was a little more crazy just because he was so young. And, you know, his parents outlived him, I think, you know, kind of thing. And so it was just like, that's never, to lose a child is never something that anybody wants to go through. So, but that was, that was very powerful as well.
True that.
And yeah.
Tell us, where did you grow up and who grew up in your household with you?
So I grew up in a little town in sort of northern central California, Monterey Bay, called Hollister. Yes, like the clothing
brand. I know where that is, actually.
Why?
Because I'm from the Bay.
Oh, that's right. I saw okay, that's right. What part of the Bay are you from?
Novato. It's in Marin. But,
gorgeous.
But yeah. Hollister. That's
yeah,
cool.
My family grew up in San Jose. I was born in San Jose. So Bay Area, definitely. It's awesome. Just quite a bit south of the city, when people, you know, what people mostly know. So it's a little country town. Nobody, nothing going on. One high school. Everybody knows each other. So I was the oldest of four girls.
That's That is so, that's like everyone's dream, I'm pretty sure. Is it?
To be like, a second mom. No, I was, it was like being a second mom, always being concerned. And we were really close in age. So there's 15 months between my sister and I, and then there was twins 18 months younger than her. So, whoa. Yeah. So,
your mom was just
my mom always was always pregnant for 3 years. And we were all in high school at the same time at one point, which was insane because, of course, we're all so involved in sports and student government. My mom is a twin. She is a female twin. So it's like, and then two girl cousins. It was just female dominated family. As adults, we look back on it very fondly. But man, during those years, we could have killed each other. Like we were so similar, but so different. And like, you know, I was like, because I was the oldest, I felt this pressure to be the perfect role model child all the time. And I had interest, genuine interest in doing all the things. And so I felt like my grades had to be perfect and I had to be like every, you know, I had to go to college and get scholarships and do all the things that set the example. You know, because my mom was very academic minded and she's like, you will go to school and you will do that. And I was like, but I just want to be an actor. You know what I mean? She's like, yeah. Great, later. You know what I mean? So,
cool. Not great. Now. Uh-huh, bye.
Sure. But just get a backup degree. So, yeah, but it was, as chaotic as it was also just so fun, you know, to have all that energy in the house and just be able to share clothes. And we had rules. It was like, well, as long
Stop
as
it.
No, serious, like as long I'm as so I get jealous. To wear the thing first, then you can wear it after, right? Like, and that didn't always work out. Yeah, so it was a lot of fun.
You are making me a teenage dream. That's not the lyrics, but I'm
so close, though.
I was so close.
It was, I totally know what you were going for.
I'm basically Katy Perry.
Right.
Okay. Yep. And did your parents both live with you?
They did. Yep. Mm-hmm. They were married always. My dad worked all of the time out of town because, again, in our town being so small, you mostly had to commute to San Jose or right. somewhere else where there was an actual industry. My mom, fortunately, was a teacher, so her schedule always kind of matched up with ours, and so she got to be the taxi driver for all of our things.
Imagine being a mom without Lyft? Because that's crazy.
No, she was Lyft. She had a minivan and right? was like, how many of your friends am I taking today? You know what I mean? Like, all the time. So, yeah, poor thing.
Love her.
Yeah.
So what have the last few years been like for you?
Very life-changing. Very complete paradigm shift in my world. And, you know, my dad was 59 when he passed away. And he was diagnosed with prostate cancer at, I think, just before he turned 55. So it was about a four-year, almost a 3.5 year battle, as they say. I hate using that word because I feel like you're fighting, but you really can't do anything but surrender. And I think that really is a better way to put it, is to say, because we're fighting ourselves. You can't really, I mean, you can't fight the disease. If you fight the disease, it's going to persist. That's what I've witnessed in my life so far. Mm-hmm. And I feel like to say I won the battle, it's like really you won the battle against yourself, which is really being able to make it through mentally and emotionally, because physically we really can't control. So I feel like, you know, the so many lessons have come out of the last, you know, hearing the news and then reaching the point of knowing it was terminal from day one. So he was stage four from day one, and he's so young. But it was, you know, unfortunately his lifestyle did not support him having a good outcome. I mean, he drank, he was a smoker, you know, he lived life so hard and it felt, I think, invincible in a lot of ways. And of course, you know, as an artist, you dig deeper through those things and you go, okay, like, there was a numbing out. There was a him avoiding, you know, dealing with a lot of trauma in his own life. Mm-hmm. And I witnessed his coping skills were just not great, you know, and they were just so detrimental to his well-being. And I think, you know, his body just finally said, okay, I can't do this anymore. And he did have some signs, you know, that indicated he had an issue. He didn't pay attention, you know, and I've worked with things like the Movember Foundation now, so I'm like,
will you explain what that is?
Yeah, the Movember Foundation is an amazing organization that is sort of supporting, basically raising awareness about men's health, because guys, you know, historically are very good at ignoring their own bodies and saying, I can tough it out, I can make it through, I'll be good. Mm-hmm. And then, like in my dad's case, sometimes it's too late because, you know, I don't think he went, I don't even remember him going to the doctor my entire childhood. You know, he just wasn't one of those guys. He was like, oh, and maybe it was a generational thing, you know, but also awesome. Just hard-headed, kind of like, nah, I'm good. I feel fine, so I must be fine kind of thing, right? Which is not the smartest approach. I think being more proactive and sort of preventative is really the way we need to be. Pushing ourselves as a culture is not going to the doctor when you're sick, but going to the doctor annually to make sure that nothing silently is happening to you. So,
do you find in your own life taking more steps with your own health?
You know, yeah, and that actually started from a young age. When I went to college, I thought, okay, what am I going to study if it's not going to be acting? You know, what can I study that I'll use the rest of my life? And I studied health and fitness. I studied exercise science and nutrition as a way of saying, okay, I'm growing up in a family where there's behaviors and lifestyles that are unhealthy. Both my parents smoked. Mm-hmm. They weren't unhealthy. They were always very active. They golfed. They did things like that. But they didn't necessarily have the understanding of what they needed to do to take the best care of themselves. It was sort of hearsay or this is what my parents did. This is what the TV is telling me to do kind of thing. My mom smoked while she was pregnant with me. It was the 80s. Like, of course, that's what happened.
Wow,
right.
So that's so fascinating.
It's crazy, you know. And so it's like I always say, well, they were doing the best they could. Right.
Absolutely.
So like we can't, you know, of course, I had a lot of years of anger and frustration against all of when I was, you know, in your 20s and you're the victim all the time. But, you know, so the more that I learned in school, the more that I realized how valuable it was to just put energy into my health. And I always say, without your health, you're nothing. Because it doesn't matter how much money you have, how many accolades, how many trophies are on your wall.
Right.
If you're unhealthy, you can't enjoy anything in your life.
It's so true.
That to me is the biggest investment you can make on yourself. And as I'm, the more I learn, because I studied more physical health, I studied, okay, what food do we put in our bodies? How do we exercise the best way? What I didn't cover was emotional health, which I think is where the acting came in. And mental health, which is what I'm.
A can of worms.
I have a very good friend who wrote an amazing book that just recently came out called "The Healing Before You're Cured," and he's an actor and an oncologist, which I find fascinating.
What?
Yes, his story is my favorite.
How is that possible to be so many cool
things
in one life?
Exactly. So he comes from a Thai family, and they said, "Look, you can be whatever you want with your life as long as you become a doctor first." And that is my favorite sentiment of all time because I'm like, "Well, that's amazing." And so that's what he did. He became an oncologist. He moved to LA. I think he did his residency here at UCLA and started acting kind of simultaneously. And what he learned in his book, it's beautiful, what he learned from the acting world helped him work with his patients and teach him empathy and really how to connect with them and listen, which so many doctors are seeing patients as sort of just clinical. You're just you're a chart, your numbers, your, you know, whatever your scores say tells me how to handle you. But he treats people like they're people. And it's from his acting world that he can bring that level of empathy into his practice. And it's absolutely amazing. So his book is fantastic. It's called Healing Before You're Cured.
Cool.
Dr. Roy Vongtama. Yeah. We'll plug that later.
Yeah. We will plug that.
He's
There's
amazing.
Also the issue of time, unfortunately, with, you know, top oncologists. My mom goes to UCSF. She is a top oncologist in the world.
Right.
And she's seeing, unfortunately, her doctor who's female seeing so many people, which is heartbreaking.
So many.
She's for very advanced cases, but you also want that level of care for everyone.
Right.
So I get frustrated on my mom's behalf, who waits sometimes 4 hours with a scheduled appointment, which I'm sure you know. But at the same time, the alternative, there's only so many doctors sometimes.
Right, correct.
Which is crazy.
It's terribly sad. And so it's sort of, you know, and again, once you're in that space where you have the diagnosis and you think, and it's very easy to fall into the victimhood from there because you're like, well, now I'm basically a part of the system and whatever healthcare is available to me, whatever healthcare I can afford, because my parents spent so much money on health insurance every month trying to keep the level of care up for my dad. And I mean, it put them in such a hole financially. It was really tough. And I think, you know, to not sort of say, you know, and again, this is in my friend's book, but it's saying, okay, what am I in control of? If I can't control what the doctors say or what they want to do with me, what can I control? How can I take over? And yes, I have to surrender, like I said, to parts of this experience, but there are things I can do to sort of keep me feeling like I have a say in this, you know, and that I'm not just victim to the progression of the disease, however it decides to take me, right? So it's a tough war to fight, you know what I mean, and balance. So
are you able to share some tips that you might have for people listening on preventative steps?
Oh, yeah. Get my friend's book.
Okay. Say the name one more time.
So it's called Healing Before You're Cured, and it's by Dr. Roy Vongtama, and he talks about the four houses of health, and this is kind of what I was mentioning earlier. So physical, obviously, that's what I studied, right? Mm-hmm. That's what he studied largely in medical school.
Yeah.
Emotional, right? Mental and spiritual. And I think those four things are not taught in school.
They are
at
not.
All. And they are more important to healing yourself and curing yourself. I mean, he has stories where people have come back from stage four and completely lived.
It's so hard for me, like, just super be honest, you know, it's hard for me to sometimes believe things like that. And yet I know that they can happen.
So I have an interesting story.
Should I read the book to get
your
inspired?
Mom should read it. You should read it. This thing. So he was writing this when my dad got died. He was my first call when I got the call from my dad.
Really?
He was my next call. And I said, what do I do? And the first question he asked me is, how bad does your dad want to live? And I sat there and my breath was taken away because I went, oh, okay, this isn't going to happen for him because I know my dad's history, his trauma history, his coping skills, lack thereof. And I knew, I was like, no, I think he had a death wish. I think he wanted to not feel the feelings that he had from his childhood so badly that he used all of these different vices to press it down. And what he said to me is, my friend, he said, Dr. Roy, cancer is the most aggressive form of rage your body can express. So this is why the emotional, the spiritual houses and the mental house are so important, because it isn't just about eating well. It isn't just about exercising. He said, he has a wonderful example in his book of somebody who came in and was doing all the things. He was meditating. He was eating well. He was, doing affirmations. He was doing all these things that we're trying to tackle. The only one he wasn't tackling was his emotional house, and that was his relationships and his life, whether it was with his kids, with his wife, with his siblings. You know, those things were, he was just ignoring all of those. And because of that, he wasn't getting well. Hmm. You know what I mean? And so, you know, he recommends therapy. It's going to take a lot of work. But again, how badly do you want to live?
Whoa.
And that question, if you can really face that question and you can ask yourself that, you know, and now somebody who's provided tools that really work, you know, and you go through, he has exercises in his book. Games you can play with yourself that help you dig into all of these houses of health.
Is
and
there
really,
one
fascinating.
Or two examples that you can think of for each of the four houses?
Yeah. So of course, physical house would be exercise and eating well. Mm-hmm. And personally, I follow a plant-based diet. I'm vegan because of everything I've ever studied up to this point in my life says that that's the best way to eat. He will recommend all of his patients go on a plant-based diet or largely plant-based diet once they are diagnosed or just in general.
Right. It's hard for some people I so respect it. Majority could make a big difference.
Yeah. And you know, obviously there's benefits for the planet on a larger scale and animal welfare and all this good stuff. But physically for you, it's tough because there's emotional attachment to food. There's nostalgia, right? There's like, well, we grew up eating this way. What do you mean I'm not going to have Thanksgiving turkey? Come on. You know, so I understand, and I don't push being vegan on people other than to say, well, here's information. Decide for yourself. You know, I always say why I decided to do it was number one, physical, because the science for me was there enough to say, oh, like this is the best for me physically. I know everything else in my life benefits when I'm physically well. This is what I'm going to do. And then, of course, second to that was animals. Great. Yay. And then the climate. Yay. Okay. We learn more. There's a lot of reasons to commit to that. But again, we're talking about the physical health. Number one for me. And of course, exercise. But exercise is less valuable to me than the nutrition part of it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so if I could go back to school and really like focus in more, I probably would have been like a registered dietitian, because everyone has to eat, but not everyone cares about exercise, right? So I was a trainer for 10 years, and that's where I put...
Oh, you were?
Yeah. I put a lot of my focus after college. That's what I did sort of when I first moved
Amazing.
To LA. Yeah. And so mental health, of course, meditation. And I'm such a novice. I know for me, when I get in the routine of doing even 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day, like I just feel so much lighter in my whole body. Mm-hmm. And whenever information comes into me, whether it's traumatizing or what, it's just so much easier to process when I'm just kind of in that centered space. Mm-hmm. He teaches in the book again how to do that. And there's so many resources nowadays, apps you can use.
Do you ever use
exactly?
Calm?
I haven't tried Calm though, but there's so many wonderful resources. I think again, there's enough science out there that is giving us the
even just a few minutes.
Do
very baby teeny boo boo, boo boo.
And
when I see teeny little baby socks at Target, I think teeny boo boo. This is how I meditate.
That's enough, right? Teeny there boo-boo. You go. And I think meditation for me might be different for you versus another.
For
you
sure.
For me, sometimes just like lying in the sun and just not being on my phone or not doing anything, and I'm like, wait a minute, I need to count this, because I'm turning off my brain. This should count as meditation. It doesn't have to be like listening to like beautiful spa music and like sitting in like cross legs. Like, it doesn't have to be that, you know. It's just really about kind of calming your mind down and letting the distractions and the interference go away for just 5 minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's for the mental health. And of course, affirmations can go along with that as well.
I'm so excited to find out the difference between mental and emotional, because right now I can't say that I know what that is.
Well, and they're all connected. So he has a diagram where they're all literally within each other. They're all connected.
Okay.
Emotional would be more like therapy, right? Like really working out, sort of journaling every day, maybe getting all the thoughts from your day out, sort of just rather than suppressing and avoiding, is leaning into and acknowledging things that are emotionally affecting you. And he has, different tactics. And I also love Brené Brown. I'm a big fan of her work, of course.
Love her. Hello. Have you seen her new Netflix
I
special?
Did. And I've listened to so many of her things before that I was like, I know that story. I know that. You know, I'm such a fangirl right now. But just her tactics as far as dealing with shame and vulnerability and how to process, you know, again, I always say this, when this information comes at you and hits you, you know, how to sort of process. And she talks about the shitty first draft of like, you know, what we tell ourselves, the story we're all telling ourselves in our head of, well, that person looked at me this way and that must mean that they hate me and now I'm going to get fired. And it's like, that's so natural because she says we're wired for story in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is something happens in our life and we write immediately a beginning, a middle, and an end to what it all means. To find
why
meaning.
Why do we do that, Christina?
Because our brains are wired for it. We're programmed for it. So, again, knowing all these things makes you act a lot nicer towards yourself, you know, because you take the pressure off of like, oh, I'm not crazy. I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but for different reasons. But I'm not crazy. It's just I'm human. And this is what we all do. And I think the culture is moving more and more toward talking about these things and not being so ashamed of having faults and having, you know, vulnerabilities. Instead of saying weaknesses, I think it should be called vulnerabilities all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's again, so many more tools out there to help us really navigate the emotional waters. And I think those are some great resources. Therapy, again, I think, you know, we're as actors, I think we're lucky because whether we wanted to or not, I think we did a lot of that in school, like in our classes, right? You're sort of just forced.
Our money went somewhere.
That's right. It went somewhere. That's right. It just, you're forced to really face yourself because you're like, well, if I'm going to be inhabiting the life and the emotional world of this other person, how can I not ask those questions of my own self and demand my own self to sort of really look at what I have going on? What is it that I have to, what makes me tick? What things scare me? And like, I have to know what sort of my instrument is made of in order to know what kind of notes I can play, right? So we're fortunate in that way that I think a lot of people aren't necessarily exposed to in their daily lives. So again, lots of tools out there, emotional health. And then spiritual health, I mean, this I think is, unless you grew up in a spiritual community, which I did not.
Mm-hmm. Most people... Well, actually, a lot of people did. A lot of people did not.
So and I think it's also your relationship to it. Some people like, oh, I went to church because I was forced to, or I went to.
Yeah.
And they look at it like, well, it's religion, or, well, it's, you know, my God. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be religion. It doesn't have to be God. It's whatever to you connects you to the entire universe, whether that's a higher power, whether that's just people in general. To me, that's, you know, so connecting with your sort of sense of spirit and your spirituality on a regular basis to give you purpose and meaning. Like, again, spirituality can be dancing. Spirituality can be playing tennis, you know, and again, my friend talks about this in his book. It's whatever to you makes you feel, I think Brene Brown mentions it too, whatever makes you feel connected to that which is greater than yourself. If you are regularly connecting and regularly kind of, it will help you heal whatever is going on in your life, because it just takes you away from the victimhood and the me sort of focus and puts you to like, wow, this is a collective. And that's another reason why I'm vegan, because I'm like, well, this is collectively something I'm doing for the world to help.
Girl, you
know what I mean?
You got me thinking about so many things.
I have too much.
Well, no, some people, you know, this might be new information. Some people might kind of know, you know, sort of the things that one needs to do, but it's always a good reminder. And I like that it's broken down. What are you doing on a daily basis to check in with your physical,
That's right.
mental, emotional, and spiritual
exactly.
houses?
That's right. And it's,
what do you do, Christina? What are some things that you
what
do?
What do I do? Oh, I love this. This is good. So I exercise probably 5 to 6 days a week.
Oh,
definitely.
See, okay, what can we do to make some people feel that? Because see, I so
who are we talking about right now?
Oh, yeah, who are we talking about? So I think that's obviously super amazing and incredibly important.
Yeah,
and I think it's interesting that people look at me and assume that, I mean, I'm a super I'm an in shape person. What I think is fascinating is that how someone's look is not indicative of their physical health. And
not necessarily.
Right. Well, there's certain things you
right.
can guess, but I've never worked out 5 or 6
And I'm not talking about
life.
Weight, by the way.
Right.
Not talking about weight. Yeah.
But I've never worked out that many days in my life, and I think it's so fascinating.
Well, and here's the thing though, I was raised that way. I was a dancer. I was an athlete. Like,
got
I didn't, it.
It
was programmed in me. Just like I didn't grow up going to church. So okay. my spiritual house is completely, you know, like new to me.
Because right. But
it
this
just,
house
but
is
this
not.
Is something that was, my parents were both athletes. They
okay.
they were avid golfers. They did, my dad did every sport under the sun. So for me, the physical house was something that was ingrained. I mean, it was like,
okay.
and then because of what I studied in school, like, what am I not going to keep exercising? You know what I mean?
What little baby steps can you give a person listening that
walking.
Wants to get into it? Okay.
I'm
going to
tell, there's a study that I heard, I can't remember if I read it or where I got it, but I'm a big nerd. I listen to nutrition podcasts. I listen to all these things, and I get little tidbits, and I go, that's the thing that's going to change people. And I like to share them, right?
What is it? What is it?
So this is fascinating. So they did this study. I hate it on mice, sadly. However, very helpful for us humans. Oh, yes. What they did is they took 3 subsets. They took a group that were 100% forced to be sedentary.
What does that mean?
Meaning, like, they weren't allowed to move.
Oh,
they were fed a normal diet, but they weren't allowed to move. Uh-huh. Right? They were either made to lay down or they basically had no space to move around in. So that they replicated our sedentary lifestyle.
Okay,
meaning just sitting all day, being in our car, not moving, getting our heart rate elevated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, second subset was made to stand. So these mice had to stand all day. Okay, they couldn't sit down. They didn't walk around, but they stood up.
Okay,
third set exercised.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they were looking at the metabolism difference between the 3 subsets of on the study. What they found is that the metabolism rate, right? This is what we're working on when we want to build our muscles and we want to, you know, eat less. We're trying to get our bodies to be more efficient at burning our fuel.
Right.
That way we can feel more fit and good about ourselves, more efficient machines. So what happened is the group that were standing and the group that exercised had the same metabolism rate, meaning you don't necessarily have a more efficient body because you're working out compared to standing. So if you think, you know, sitting down, they say, is the new smoking, right? It's terrible for our bodies. It's very,
oh my God,
I know you haven't heard
intense.
That. Oh, it's awful.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's really, really unhealthy.
That's the standing desk.
This
stuff.
Is why the standing desk thing is coming
okay.
around. So to me, if a gym intimidates you, I understand. I get that. Walk. stand more, and you're going to help your body, not only in just your physical feel, like your spine is going to be more aligned, all these good things, mm-hmm. but you will increase your metabolism just by doing the act of standing and taking a walk. Taking a walk does so many wonderful things for our brain. Again, 10 minutes, you can put on your headphones, you can listen to a podcast rather than sitting down and do, you know what I mean? Like just walking. Mm-hmm. And so
I'm not in my head. Yes. So hard.
Yeah. Like, yes. It clears it up and okay. it's nice. It gets the blood flowing. So I say through that sort of the second tier to that would be doing something in a community based. Mm. I personally have been doing CrossFit for 6 years just because of the community.
Like, it's oh my so God. Amazing. Okay.
I know.
You're amazing.
How cliche am I?
No, but you're amazing. No. Do you know how bad I wish I could? Well, you know what? We all have something different.
But there's so many community based workout programs nowadays. Yeah. It's, I mean, there's Orange Theory, which is much less intense than CrossFit. But again,
and I didn't mean to shame. I think that's
no.
I'm celebrating.
And I think again, I think so much of what happens is people like again, like for me, going to church every Sunday, I'm like, what is that? I don't even understand this. I am completely, you know, so everyone right. has their thing that is foreign to them, that intimidates them.
Yes.
I would love to go to a meditation center and meditate every day. I don't, that's intimidating because I've never done it, right? So it's not that.
Have you done the Den on La Brea?
Oh my God. Okay, here's where I'm at in my spiritual journey. Okay. I follow them on Instagram. I look at all their events and I still haven't gone. And I'm like, this is the Friday I'm going. I'm going this Friday. Like, and I'm just like, now I have a friend who works there and I'm like, I'm going to go, right? Like, well, when are we going? And I'm like waiting for her to like take me, you know? And I'm just like, because I'm intimidated, I'm scared. I don't know what to expect. And it was on the
so
other side of that.
For anyone listening, you know, if you don't do CrossFit 6 days a week and you've been to the Den, it's all kind of evens out.
See,
right?
That's what
Wait,
I mean.
Your last name is literally Christina Denton.
I know. Like,
hey,
what am I doing with my time?
So I'm excited for
we all have things to work on is the point, right? I may look yes. like, oh, great. You're this like, you know, model of physical health. Well, great. My spiritual house is like
You're just
dead.
Like a casual. Yeah. So Christina, like, I just want you to know, like that happens to me all the time. People are just like, oh my gosh, who is this model of physical health? Like yeah. I'm just walking down the street and everyone's like, what am I?
Yeah.
You know,
no, but like the thing, right? People,
totally
people think we have it all together. There is always something to work on. You know what I mean?
So like, oh my God, people do not think that about me. But you're an Egyptian goddess. So praise
well,
me.
Thank you. But
okay,
yes.
So you're working out vegan. And
so
then,
I work out. So for physical, right? That's yeah. what I do for physical health. For my mental health, mm-hmm. oh gosh, my biggest thing has been being a lot nicer to myself, mm-hmm. not so critical. I'm a perfectionist by nature. Mm-hmm. So I've done a lot of work on, you know, sort of, again, how something comes in, information comes into me and how I process it. Whether I journal and get things kind of out on paper at night when I'm really in my head. I know I'm really in my head when I don't meditate, you know, and I don't want to go to the gym or something like that. You know what I mean?
So you recommend people journal?
I think journaling is amazing. Okay. You'll hear that from so many different gurus out there when it comes to this stuff. They all talk about just purging your brain's nonsense, right? Get that interference and that noise out of you. And it's easier. I do it at night because that's when I'm the loudest in my head. I've always been like that. Even as a kid, I stayed up late, like later than everyone, just like spinning thoughts. I think
Why
also
is so relatable. That image is just
well,
so
and
clear.
Being in a big family for me, it was like staying up later than everyone allowed me to have quiet. And I'm an introvert by nature, so it's like, oh, now I can think. You know what I mean? So it's like it was just nice. But for me, journaling at night, getting that all out, is really helpful. Even if like, and it's again me being a perfectionist, I'd be like journaling. Oh, okay, well, I need to say profound things every time I journal, right? Like that's what you're supposed to do.
Oh, hell
no. No, I'll make a to-do list. I'll start like drawing pictures. And I'm like, it's the act of sitting here, just like the meditating. If you don't know what you're doing, it's the act and the ritual of doing, if sitting down and just being there is the beginning, and it will get there. You know, it really will. So there's no right and way, right, wrong way to do any of these things, as long as you're really just, you're sort of like watering the seeds, it'll grow, you know?
Yes.
So I would say that's kind of how I support my sort of a mental and emotional kind of crossover there, because it does help get my emotions in a better place. Emotions, I listen to music. I have gone to therapy off and on in my life. I talk things through. I have a sister that I'm really close with, and you know, whenever, and she's of course a psychologist. Just happens to be a psychologist. It's so funny.
Amazing.
Her and I, like, I'm like, I studied the human condition through acting and emotion, sort of the emotional way, and she went a more clinical academic route, but we both are fascinated with the human condition and what motivates us.
What if the four sisters studied one thing of each of the four houses?
How crazy, right?
Then you'd be a reality star.
I know, then we'd be, that's right, exactly. So, yeah, so I think just keeping my emotional house in check, there's, you know, a number of different outlets that I have. I working out really does help me too. It gets me, you know, I did yoga today and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I just feel so good. You know, like it just, there's a lot of different ways that I kind of cross over the houses to help with one thing or the other on a daily basis. And then, you know, the spiritual house, telling you, it is
you're still knocking on the door.
I'm still knocking on the door. And I think sometimes when I am, when I'm writing, sometimes I find a thing that's connecting to me to this thing that's bigger than myself, because all of a sudden characters are talking to me and I feel beautiful and I feel like, wow, I really, like, I wrote this poem and I'm like, wow, I just feel so, I feel so connected to the world right now for whatever reason, you know? And I think that's why I continue to produce projects, because it just helps me connect to everyone. It's like, I'm going to tell this one story. It might be my story. It might be someone else's story, but this one story, and I know it's going to help somebody. And it makes me feel just so good inside that, like, I feel like I'm giving back. I feel like I'm sharing and I'm helping people feel less alone, because that's the whole reason I'm in the, you know, acting and writing world, is because as a kid, I would watch these things in my little, you know, in my house with my tiny town where nothing was happening, and I would feel like I connected to the whole world through movies, you know.
Yeah.
So things like that, I think, for me, is spiritual in nature. But
for sure. And I love that you said different kinds of things can be spiritual.
I think so.
It doesn't have to just be one thing or the other.
Yeah, and when different. And I heard that somewhere, and I'm sure it was Brené Brown or one of these people that I love, and I
one
felt
of the gurus.
All of a sudden I was like, oh good, I don't, you know, it's not that I have to go to a church necessarily, but I will say, like, there's been moments in my life, and losing my father was certainly one of them, that I went to a very dark place after that happened. And I would say,
yeah,
that
what was that experience like for you?
Very spiritual, in fact, what I would call spiritual. I actually didn't make it up north in time before he was put on life support. In his last couple of days, they had assumed he would make it, you know, through Thanksgiving. This happened to be Thanksgiving of 2017, and he. My grandma, his mother, was coming up on a train from San Diego, waited for her. We drove up. The middle of our drive, I got the call and said, you know, he's just not, unfortunately, his lungs were filling up with fluid at that point. They couldn't aspirate. And they were like, do you want him to go on life support? And I was like, of everyone in this entire family, I'm the one being asked this question? No pressure. You know, like, I was like, are you kidding? Like, and I just, this calm came over me. And instead of, like, and it's in my nature to kind of be calm in very stressful, very traumatic situations, and because I want to fix and hate and save everyone. So this calm came over me, and I said, you know, normally I would say I don't want to be selfish and say, well, yes, please keep him on life support for me. But I said, no, you know what? I said, yeah, I want to be there when he takes his last breath. So please, like, put him on life support, even if it's only for a few hours. Like, sorry, Dad, but I need this, you know, and I think a lot of people would appreciate it, especially his mom and things like that. So in that, you know, we were in that hospital room, and we had like 20 to 30 people in there. We were so lucky in our small town. They were so wonderful. Everyone knew us. So, you know, his best, closest friends were there, all of his kids, his grandkids. It was beautiful. And they were all very sad when we got there. And I just, something came over me that I said, okay, I'm not the, like, this is beautiful. Like, this is so beautiful that we're all together. Like, I had them go get his favorite beer. Everybody was drinking. I don't even drink. I took a sip. I was like, this is disgusting, but this is for you, Dad. And, like, you know, we were singing. My dad was a singer as well. He loved to sing. We were singing him songs. We were just doing all these really beautiful things to kind of elevate the spiritual feeling in the room. You know, I didn't want it to be somber. Like, yes, he had cancer, and yes, this wasn't his choice, but let's celebrate him right now. So, you know, and what they do is they send everyone out of the room when they take them off the life support, right? And then they bring
everybody.
Yeah, because the tubes, when they come out, it can be messy and it can be bloody, and they don't want anybody to be traumatized by that. So we all kind of, I just remember being all sent out in the hallway, and people, and we're literally sitting on the floor, just kind of looking at the ground. And I thought, God, this is the moment in life. This is one of those pivotal moments in life that all of us will forever be changed moving forward from here, you know. And I'll never forget the way that everyone looked you know, the looks on their faces. And I was, it's not that I was having an out-of-body experience, but I just had such a calm feeling over me because, again, I was like, there's nothing we can do at this point but give over and just surrender and just trust that he's going to a better place. He's not in pain. He's not suffering. I mean, he was in so much pain. He was suffering so, I mean, couldn't even walk, couldn't take care of himself. He couldn't bathe himself. I mean, no person should be subjected to that when they're 59. You know, I mean, and he had all his hair. No, nothing was gray. Like, you know, he looked otherwise like fine, right? But, and so we all went back in there and something came over me that I don't know. Something took over me and my spirit where I was so calm and I put my head on his temple and I put my hand on his head and I just started humming to him this like really calming song. And it took him about 20 minutes, I would say, before he finally passed. And, it was one of the most beautiful moments of my entire life because I felt so like we were doing the right thing. Like it wasn't just like, why? It was just calm and connected. And I felt more connected to him in that moment than I ever did my entire life, you know, because I felt like I was taking care of him. And I knew that this was the way that like, it just, I had no plan. You know, you can't plan how this is going to go down. Even if you think like we had this whole 4-hour drive to try to figure out what was going to happen. And I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to say. I was like, no, like I just, you know, and we all took our time individually with him before they took him off life support. Cause I asked for that. I said, I want to spend some time alone with my dad. And it was such an interesting thing that came out of my mouth to him because we had kind of a tough relationship because he was a drinker and I was the oldest and I saw a lot of the volatility that would come with that. And the last moments, you know, when I spent with him, I just said, you know, Dad, I just want to tell you, like, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm so sorry for holding you to such a high expectation my whole life. Like, I didn't know enough. And I thought you could be just this amazingly perfect father to us. And you were doing the best you could. And I didn't recognize that. And
isn't
I'm
it crazy
so
that
sorry.
Adult parents are adults. They're people.
Do reverse parenting. Yeah. It's fascinating.
What
Please.
Advice do you have? And I hope this ties into what Please. You're saying. What advice do you have for someone who is going through something similar to what you experienced?
I think, you know, the one thing that I kept every time I would go home and visit, I wasn't there every day in the trenches like my sisters and my mom were. I mean, I give them so much credit for how much they went through they went to every doctor's appointment. They bathed him. They did all, I mean, and I was bouncing in and out every couple of months, you know, so I would see the big change because I would see him and then I would see it. I would go and I'd be like, wow, he's really not looking well, you know, but they were there in the trenches every day. And, I think for the people around the person that's sick is you need to have your own support system. You're spending so much energy trying to take care of that person that you forget about your own needs. And you can only be as strong for the person as you are for yourself, right? So if you don't have your own sort of support system to lean on through the experience, then it's going to really not help you show up for them in the best way. So I very much encourage people to, you know, whether they're in therapy, whether they're, you know, again, taking care of all their four houses of health, but to make sure they're really checking in with themselves and saying, okay, especially the people in the trenches, like my mom and like one of my sisters who was just there every day. And I don't think my mom knew what to do with herself afterward for the first year. She was in total survival shock mode because I was like, Mom, you don't have someone to take care of every day. Like, what are you going to do with yourself? And she's like, I don't know. You know
How
what I mean?
How is she doing now?
It's interesting. She's approaching, you know, at the year anniversary in this last Thanksgiving, she had a really lovely moment where she said, okay, like I'm ready to start living for me and I don't feel guilty anymore about it. And it took her that long, but she still kind of goes through waves. And she's about to turn 70. She was 9 years older than him, of course. Go, Mama.
Go, Mom. Yes, girl.
So, you know, I said to her the other day, because we're talking about her and her twins' birthday are coming. And we're like, Mom, what do you like? We haven't planned anything. What do you want? Like,
do they look the same? Do you have like
they're fraternal, okay. But my sisters are identical. And yes, they very much look
Wouldn't
alike.
Wouldn't that be weird if you had like another person that looked like your mom that wasn't your mom?
I look a lot like my aunt, which is so weird for people. And they meet my aunt now and they're like, oh my God, you look so much like your aunt. I'm like, yeah, I know. It's very interesting. But and so what I said is, I said, Mom, you know, I said, you know, you don't have any more kids. You don't have a husband that is sick. I said, this is like, the next chapter officially is starting for you. You're going to be 70. I said, you may not make it to 80. We have no idea what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and just again, because the generation of her generation isn't thinking in those way. Most of the people, they weren't taught to think like, they're just like, oh, we just get through the day. We just go to work and we do our thing and we get through the day and that's the day, you know? You're like, but there's a grander thing happening in life. Like, and because my dad passed, all of a sudden I was like taken up to this like bird's eye view of my world and said, whoa, if I wasn't trying to live every day to the fullest before, like, good Lord. You know what I mean? Like,
good Lord, are you doing it now?
I'm done with those things on my goals list that are just getting pushed back every year. You know, like it really just lights this fire in you that says, wait a minute, like this guy didn't get to do all the things he wanted to do in his life. I know it. I just know it. So, yeah, so she has up and down, just like I did. I was really dark for a while, and then I had this kind of spiritual awakening like last fall, where I was like, whoa, like all the things in this world are like I said, precious. And I'm done, you know, being mean to myself and feeling critical. And I'm gonna have courage, because my dad would have wanted me to have courage, you know, every single day and everything I do.
That's so right, sister. And yeah, you do.
I try.
Last things, do you have a book, podcast? Well, you already have your great book that you're recommending.
Yes.
Is there another podcast or film, something you found helpful during your grief process? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, and I actually am an ambassador for this wellness brand this year called Saluna, and it's Kimberly Snyder, who's an amazing celebrity nutritionist who I've been following for years, and she's got a feel-good podcast, and she covers everything from, again, all the different houses of health, physical well-being, emotional well-being, and it's, I would say, largely geared toward females, but there is a large male audience as well. She has just amazing topics, and her books, she's got a book called Gifts, I think it's called, I'm getting her and Brené Brown's books confused, but it's basically recipes for our perfectly imperfect life. And her whole thing is about, because she lost her mom a couple of years ago and went through this whole shift as well. Mm-hmm. And she was focusing more on nutrition, and now she's kind of more about the overall wellness and overall well-being. And so she's got a beautiful new book out that I really love, and I recommend to people. So it's called Recipes for Your Perfectly Imperfect Life. And then her podcast is the Feel Good Podcast with Kimberly Snyder. So those are beautiful tools as well.
Awesome. We'll have to plug those. And then say the name of your friend's book one more time.
Healing Before You're Cured.
Great. Mm-hmm. Love that. And where can people find you and connect with you?
I'm on Instagram and Facebook, but Instagram mostly. Christina with a K, 7 Denton.
Christina with a K, 7 Denton. Thank you so much for sharing your experience.
Absolutely.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
I just said we. Guys,
All of the people in this room that are behind her. All of,
I really appreciate it.
Yeah. We don't know who's here.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know.
We don't know who's here. There could be people just watching, and we have no idea.
That like, could be my dad.
I blacked out. I have
room.
No idea what I said for like the last 30 minutes. Just channeling energy.
And I appreciate you sharing your perspective on, you know, how to take care of yourself, not just, you know, when you're going through a tragedy, but you're in your day-to-day life.
Yeah. Because when those big things happen, those big life moments, good or bad or indifferent, you're going to be able to process it a lot easier when you're in a good place.
Absolutely. Yeah. We are right on time. Thank you so much, Christina.
Absolutely.
Your Egyptian goddess.